From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today, the 27th installment of our conversation with Professor Luciana Bone about the political economy and history of the Soviet Union. Welcome, Luciana.
Good morning, Don.
So,
we
made it to 1917.
Yeah, we're moving from 1912 to 1917.
Mm-hmm.
When, in October, the Bolsheviks seized power, not through a coup, but through a revolution. There's a difference.
That's right.
A revolution is not a coup. A coup is a counter-revolution. An attempt at coup in the year 1917 did occur, and it was in August. I get confused with July and August, but let's say July, August 1917, during the Kornilov affair, we should call it.
What do they call it? They call it the Kornilov uprising or the Kornilov mutiny or something. I forget the term.
Yeah, I guess the
Kornilov affair will do.
Yeah,
all
go
right.
ahead.
Yeah, let's call it the Kornilov affair. That works.
Okay. And we need only mention it here for an interesting thing that happened that helped the Bolshevik Revolution. Anyway, Kornilov was appointed by Kerensky, by the provisional government, set up by the February Revolution. Kornilov was appointed by Kerensky to head the army, but Kornilov seems to have taken upon himself to move on Petrograd, and Kerensky feared that he would be overthrown and a military dictatorship would be installed. Now,
right.
We're not going to talk in depth about this because there are all sorts of interpretations of whether Kerensky was in cahoots with Kornilov and blah, 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 blah. But at any rate, this Kornilov did threaten the Kerensky rule. So
right.
What happened that is important to us is that Kerensky was forced to distribute arms to the Bolsheviks. And these arms were kept. To the Bolsheviks, meaning the people in the masses
right.
in the
in
Soviet.
The streets, right.
It also forced Kerensky to let out all sorts of Bolsheviks imprisoned in the July operation that he conducted against the Bolsheviks. This was, chaos. So Kornilov was very helpful to the 1917 revolution in a
right,
in
sort of a backhanded way. You know, and let me correct myself here too. Just for emphasis, really, it's more accurate to say that they were in the hands of the Soviets than of the workers who were in the Soviets rather than in the streets, because in fact, the Soviets were the actual workers' organizations that had the real workers leading the real organizations that were the real backbone of the revolution.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Soviets. So this wasn't like
say a, who they were,
yeah,
are again. Go
and,
ahead.
And
go
this
ahead.
Yeah, this wasn't like a mob spontaneous uprising that took place. This was an worker organized under the leadership of the Bolshevik Party, a worker-organized revolution, which is quite
distinct.
Yeah,
the 1917 October, you mean.
That's right. Well, that's what those are the people, the guns end up in their hands, and so when it's time for the revolution, they got the guns.
Exactly. And so it's important, though, to note that at least we say that the October Revolution was not a coup.
Right.
I mean that the October Uprising was not a coup, but a revolution.
Correct.
Because Because why, Don?
Well, first of all, I mean, because it's the reality of it. And the thing, the slander against that reality is based on the fact that they characterized the Bolsheviks as some sort of revolutionary elite that was, you know, the embryonic version of the dictatorship by the bureaucrats that would follow. In other words, they were saying, in essence, these people usurped the revolution and put themselves in charge, and that is a coup and not a revolution. And that's, in fact, not what happened at all.
No. And so a revolution is a change in class rule and class power. And that revolution had actually happened in February. That is a change in class rule from the feudal aristocracy of the Tsar regime to a bourgeois style revolution.
Right.
In February. So there had been this type of revolution, a change in power from aristocracy, feudal aristocracy, absolute monarchy, to a, let's call it democratic bourgeois revolution for the time being.
Right.
But if the Bolsheviks had enacted a coup in October 1917, I mean, that would mean that they had were going to reinstate the Tsar's regime, if we take coup.
Right.
As counter-revolution.
Right.
Definition as counter-revolution.
Right. They would restore the status quo ante to the first part of the revolution. Right.
Oh, and worse. And more, and you know,
more repressive. Right. Like we saw after 1905, right?
Yeah. And instead, the October Revolution extended power to more people, to a new class, which will be the the workers and the peasants. So they didn't reinstate the Tsar regime. It wasn't a coup. And so to go back to, let me see here, I'm losing the thread of my thought. So if the Bolsheviks had enacted a coup in October 1917, that would have meant that they had reinstated the Tsar regime, as we said, which had been overthrown by the February 1917 democratic bourgeois wannabe promising to be parliamentary revolution.
Right.
They intended but obstructed and never brought about an election for a constituent assembly. So instead, the October Revolution moved the change in class rule forward from bourgeois to workers and peasants.
Right.
Now the Bolshevik managed to overthrow the bourgeois order because in 6 months, and here we get to the Soviets, in 6 months from February to October, their power grew from a minority party to a party having majority power from within the Soviets. That is, they became prominent in the Soviets. Now, the Soviets, we remember, were organs of popular self-government.
Right.
They had formed in the wake of the February Revolution in all the districts of the city.
Right.
They were the work of the workers and soldiers. Within these committees, the Bolsheviks gained a gradual upper hand. So, never really overwhelming compared to the socialist revolutionaries and the Mensheviks at this point, but these were the two other components of the left side of the bourgeois revolution in progress in Russia. So, in this context of these 6 months, the Bolsheviks emerged as the only ones to have an organization in touch with the workers and able to mobilize them on the political objectives with and concrete political objectives. The eight-hour day,
right. Yep.
For example. Yep. And this dominance, shall we call it, made the socialist revolutionary and the Mensheviks substantially dependent on the Bolsheviks in the ability to appeal to the workers of Petrograd and organize them in the struggle. Now, the socialist revolutionaries we should define, because they become extremely important in maintaining the revolution tactically. At any rate, the socialist, best definition for the socialist revolutionaries is sort of a post-populist, neo-populist, agrarian reformers, peasant-oriented. They define the peasant class not as providers of labor or distinguished from providers. Can you help me out?
Yeah,
here?
It came from the Narodniks, the populace.
The Narodniks, yes.
Yes, and we were talking the 1860s, 1870s. Yeah, Herzen and Lavrov, some others that were...
Chernov, yes.
Yeah, Chernov. And then it split. Then there were the left and the right SRs, or the SRs and the right SRs. And
In October, yes.
That's right, yeah, right at the time of the revolution. But you could see that for example, the break that takes place in the government between, say, Lenin and Kerensky over the course of the period from February to October, and we're using the Russian months for that. Actually, here it was November, March and November.
Yeah.
But the split was evident. You could see that these different trends existed, going back to 1905 even. We've been describing some of that. But you had at the Petrograd or the St. Petersburg Soviet, the vice chair was Kerensky. Everybody was trying to do coalition politics, basically, and also the ideological distinctions between the different groups hadn't become manifest. They weren't, some people might have had them still in their heads, and they were hashing it out in the newspapers and such, but, they weren't ossified ideological trends by any means at that point. It was very fluid.
Yes, that's very important.
Okay.
Now, in Stalin's assessment in 1924, or what happened in 1917, Stalin quotes Lenin and says and comments on how important the Soviets had been for this miracle that happened in Russia. Which was a miracle. I mean, it was the October Revolution,
right.
In a backward country, in feudal situations, etc. So he quotes Lenin, and he says, Stalin quotes Lenin, "Had not the popular creative spirit of the Russian Revolution, which had gone through the great experience of the year 1905, given rise to the Soviets as early as February 1917, this would have been the Kerensky Soviets.
Right.
That you mentioned.
Yes.
They could not, under any circumstances, have seized power in October, because success depended entirely upon the existence of ready-made organizations, of a movement embracing millions, these ready-made forms were the Soviets. And these Soviets gradually radicalized from the Kerensky-approved Soviets in February to far more radical organizations of workers and peasants, which eventually became, well, to which the Bolsheviks joined and helped and helped to radicalize, or not so much helped to radicalize as grasped the potential and forwarded this radicalization.
Yeah, I mean, the peasants were, you know, some of these parties that came into being the SRs were entirely peasant groupings, and historically there was obviously a convergence of the trajectories of the peasantry and the working class in Russia, just because of the realities of the society and the huge contradictions that existed. And so there were groupings like the SRs where these things were kind of broad coalitions of different trends, and then, you know, by the time you get to, you know, coming up into October, you have an actual program for this is what needs to change, and this is what how we're going to actually govern. And you saw the Bolshevik program start to gel, which included, with respect to the peasantry, most importantly, the question of the nationalization of the land rather than redistributing it to peasants. They would take it, you know, in the name of the people, and then you know, the people would organize and arrange that through, you know, with the government.
Correct. The SRs wanted a socialization of the peasantry, whereas the Bolshevik wanted a nationalization of the peasantry,
right,
of the land, I should say.
Right.
And so Lenin goes on, these ready-made forms were the Soviets, and that is why in the political sphere there awaited us those brilliant successes.
Yeah, you know, I'm sorry, because this is something that people don't really ponder that often, and it's a big boogaboo. The question is essentially, as you change the society going forward, do you help the peasantry become a petty bourgeoisie and ultimately a landed bourgeoisie, or do you have them become proletarians? And so how they stand in relation to the land they work, you have to look to the models that, how do the workers stand in relation to the factories in which they work and to the industry in which they work? And so the Bolsheviks were trying to harmonize this by moving forward, in their view, the peasantry to becoming workers, you know, proletarians.
Yeah, one sign of alarm, and I will continue with the quotation later. Yeah. One sign of alarm was that the most adaptable members of the Soviets, even some workers, were satisfied with some of the reforms. That is, in the early spring, let's say between February and May.
Right.
But it was then the actions of the provisional government towards war and towards the land that radicalized them.
Right.
So even the Soviets were evolving,
I mean, now they were becoming actual organs of power themselves, the people constituted in the Soviets, and a parallel, this is the thing we saw from most of the Soviet Union's history, a parallel power structure.
Yeah, and what I'm being stymied about being really clear is because I see that there will be a constant, ongoing struggle between these accommodating elements, which will be the right wing of the party, the SRs, and the Bolsheviks, and that struggle will mark the years from 1917 to the death of Stalin. I mean, eventually, I want to argue that the Bolsheviks were never managed to be dominant. I mean, to be a Bolshevik, you had to be theoretically sound, grounded, have a good deal of political tactical, strategic, and even what would you say, what we call pragmatic here,
right. Yep.
Which Lenin showed.
Oh, yeah.
He showed that kind of pragmatism, but not in the service of distorting the final goal,
right.
Which was the proletarian power. In the service of proletarian power, for example, he promised the railway union in 1917 that the railway union wanted to have some sort of autonomy. And he was in charge of all communication, etc. This was early in 1917, one of the crises. And they were, you know, threatening, causing disruption, etc. And Lenin said, okay, we'll enter into a coalition. And Kamenev and Zinoviev said, oh, good. We want a coalition like that with the unions. And then, you know, Lenin said later on, shortly after, said, well, there will be no coalition with this union. You see what I mean?
Yeah,
and that was just to dampen the possibility of disruption.
Yeah, of a challenge from there, yeah. That's right, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it's just, that's
so just an example of, okay, so is this devious? Well,
it's
what
politics.
What would happen if everybody split into autonomy? Go ahead.
Yeah, it's politics. That's you play to win.
Yeah, so that's right. So to be a Bolshevik was really an enormous effort in education, in politics, in economics, and you know it was a complete education, and few people could achieve that.
Right.
So, Lenin says, so the Soviets were crucial, and that's why we were successful. And he said, because they were so crucial, because the new form of political power was ready to hand. That is, we could form a government with the Soviets, and based on proletarians and peasants. And all we had to do was, by passing a few decrees, to transform the power of the Soviets from their embryonic state, in which it existed in the first months of the revolution, into a legally recognized form, which has become established in the Russian state, into the Russian Soviet Republic. Right. Stalin quoting Lenin, Stalin in 1924, Lenin earlier. But the competing form of government would have been the assembly, the Constituent Assembly. But let me just go on with sort of the overview, and then
let's do that. And and that'll be as far as we can go, because I think we got about about 5 minutes left. So let's just do a little sketch.
All right. Well, then I'll just go. I hope to complete it with that. Now, the reason why the masses became attached to the Bolshevik, and this was made possible thanks to the clarity of their policy platform, which can be summarized in the words peace, bread, and land, and all power to the Soviets, which attracted a large part of the urban proletarian and of the soldiers. We have to remember, when we talk about the Constituent Assembly, we will talk about the geography, the geographical areas in Russia where who was prominent and you know, who voted, etc., for whom.
Right. Yeah, I mean, the country, it was massive. It's in 8 time zones. This is, you know, maybe there's telegraph service to parts of it, but Most of those things weren't constructed until after the revolution. Certainly the railroad from, there was no high-speed rail from Moscow to Peking, for example, or Beijing. So, you know, these places were remote from each other. That's the point. Very remote in every sense.
So, let me see how I can shorten this. Basically, the Kerensky government, especially after the repression of the... There was an ill-advised insurrection led by the Bolsheviks in July, to which Stalin was part. It was just ill-advised. I mean, Lenin was furious because he was in hiding in Finland. And so it was a kind of adventure. And that brought the repression on the Bolsheviks by Kerensky. So that was one thing that discredited it. And then the Kornilov affair and the inability to ensure decent conditions of existence and the continuation of the war. All of this brought the masses towards the Bolsheviks. So the credibility of the government as the executor of the will of the revolutionary masses was compromised and practically gone. And there was the betrayal and the weakness of the provisional government.
Which had almost no support in the actual, you know, it's in Petrograd. And almost nobody in Petrograd, except for the people that represented these different factions on the council, cared about them. They were not popular.
That's right. And in addition to the Soviets, what favored the revolution was that the Bolshevik Party pushed for a new government. And so under the condition of the Kerensky misgovernment, the party represented by Bukharin, that is the SR and Zinoviev, pushed for a new government of compromise, a coalition with the bourgeoisie to exit from the political crisis of the provisional government. So they wanted, that is Bukharin and Zinoviev, wanted a new coalition with a party of cadets and with Kerensky, but a little more biased to the left. And Lenin said no. By the end of August, during the Congress of the party, during which he was absent because he was in hiding, Lenin began his campaign to push the insurrection against the provisional government of the February Revolution and replace it with something completely new. So not only were the Soviets important and crucial, but the condition of Russia and the inability of the bourgeois government to satisfy the requests of the masses, the specific historic condition of Russia made the conversion of the masses into a revolutionary mass possible. In other words, you can't repeat the Russian revolution.
These are the things, if you were going to try to repeat it, these are the elements you'd have to have in place. Number one, which you mentioned early on, and we discussed a little further after that, there was this, you know, the development of the Soviets, which were organizations of workers. They're worker-run, worker-led, and they were places
and
where
peasants.
And peasants. And these are places where their political activity was taking place. It was a parallel, like a mass, a popular parallel structure, in essence. And
exactly.
So that's in place parallel to the government. Now the government is imploding. There's no government, only this parallel force. And now that parallel force is in a position that people inside the government can reconstitute the government in tandem with the Soviets that are outside of it. And that's the specific situation. So, all right, we got to come back to it. We're out of time.
Yep.
Luciana, thank you very much.
Thank you, Don. Bye-bye.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.